Hey, podcast listeners, it's Anne. Four years ago, the poet Richard Blanco stepped up to the podium in front of the National Mall, Barack Obama on one side, Joe Biden on the other, and he read this poem.
Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, America, one today. One sun rose on us today, kindled over our shores, peeking over the Smokies, greeting the faces of the Great Lakes, spreading a simple truth across the Great Plains, then charging across the Rockies.
Richard Blanco was the youngest, first immigrant, first Latino, and first openly gay inaugural poet. But he's in a different mood today. In the final episode of our News from Poems series, he joins us from his small town, Bethel, Maine, to read a new poem written just for us and you.
November eyes on Main Street. The morning after the morning of November 8th, for the first time I doubt even the sun. As I drive east down Main Street, radio off to Amy's Diner. She bobby-pins her hair, smiles her usual, good morning, but her eyes askew say something like, you believe this? As she pours my coffee without a blink. Three cups, black, and a muffin in me. So I head up Prospect to see Tom at my bank, cash a measly check from some grand magazine for some grand poem of mine, loaded with some grand words like transcend, as if my inked verbs could bend a river's will, shuffle stars, change the fate of our nation, or the color of Tom's eyes, thinking what I think of our reflection on the bulletproof window, asking, so now what, Mr. Poet? I can't answer us. I can only remember today I'm supposed to buy a rake, light bulbs, nails to hang my dying mother's photos. So I stop at Poe's Hardware, see Mikey, who knows me and what I need. He rings me up, doesn't say goodbye, says good luck, as if his eyes can see the uncertain gray in my own. Worried about my immigrant cousin, polar bears, factory jobs, women, missiles, race, and all the rest, resting on the afternoon after the afternoon of November 8th. I have bills due by the 15th, so I go to the post office. Those American flag stamps are all Debbie has left. I refuse to buy them, never mind, in my eyes, that she dismisses with a suit yourself. My bills can wait, but not my dog's treats or the milk I ran out of. So I cross back over to the food basket on Main. Also, onions, mustard, oranges, steak tips at the checkout. Paper or plastic, Jan asks. But it doesn't matter. What matters is this. She's been to my barbecues. I've donated to her son's football league. We've shoveled each other's driveways. We send each other Christmas cards. She knows I'm Latino and gay. Yet suddenly, I don't know who she is. As I read the button on her polyester vest, Trump, make America great again. Meaning, she doesn't really know me either. We manage smiles when she hands me my change, but our locked eyes say nothing. So I drive home to my hillside. By dinner time, I'm still not hungry. I'm numb, as hopeless as I am drowsy. So here I am, slumped in my sofa, gathering the last seconds of the sun. Here, the first snowfall begins, and here, the light lingers, possesses each flake, set a flicker. Like 100 crystalline eyes urging me to trust I'll survive every season. So here, all's wrong with the world tonight, but here, I have marches to march, poems left to write, and my eyes to keep saying no, until all passes as it must pass on some other morning after the morning of some other November 8th.
Wow. Richard, that's so amazing. You do so much in what seems at the surface, a fairly simple story of your going through your daily errands. How did that poem come together for you?
You know, in the days, the day after the election, I just kept on seeing sort of this silence in our eyes everywhere I went. It was kind of a feeling of like what was not being said was even more important than what was being said. It drew a parallel to my parents when they used to tell stories about in communist Cuba, how, you know, you didn't know who your neighbors were anymore. You didn't know who your friends were anymore. You didn't know who your family was anymore, because there was always something behind the curtain, so to speak. And this lack of trust that I saw in each other's eyes in these days was really, really uncomfortable.
I think that's an experience you would have, especially living as you do in a small town. Something has happened that suddenly makes you wonder whether this really is home at all, which is, I think, the way a lot of people felt in America the day after the election.
Yeah. And it's, you know, adding to the small town, the idea of a small town and of home, it's really interesting because most of our issues, we are not partisan, right? I mean, we in the good old New England spirit, we sort of get together and just sort of talk about things and decide what's best for the community. And the idea of a political agenda or platform or a party line is never towed, right? But suddenly in this election, it was very polarizing in ways that we weren't necessarily talking about. So that's why this poem is all about the eyes and really just guessing at where we are in this polarized spectrum, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. You grew up in Miami, I think, right? And your parents or grandparents are from Cuba. Now you live in this little tiny town in northern New England. And, you know, there's that stereotype of New England as very insular and white. Does it feel more that way to you now after the election? I mean, do you suddenly feel that as a Latino man, you're set apart in a way that you weren't before?
When I first moved up here, I did have, you know, you do have all the stereotypes of New England and whatnot. And I kept telling people, I'm Cuban, I'm Latino, I'm gay. And like, people were like, okay, whatever. It was kind of a surprise, right? I thought I was going to be sort of this exotic animal up in Bethel, Maine, right? And the New England attitude, you know, is like, as long as you're a good person, you know, go about your business. Don't bug me. I won't bug you. You know, that kind of frost sort of mending wall kind of world, right? It was interesting because I felt almost like, why aren't you looking at me differently? And then what I'm realizing now that I think on sort of a very personal level, that's kind of the way it works. But then there's this layer that's been introduced of politics where there can be this whole other thinking, right? This whole other agenda or hidden agenda that is completely opposed to everything that I am or represent, and yet I'm welcome into their living rooms. So I'm still trying to sort of figure out that contradiction in a way.
Which is something poetry does, right? Poetry, it seems to me, begins with things that we can't actually say or figure out with regular rational narrative language. You'll say it better.
No, certainly poetry, and I've written memoir as well, and when something strikes me, I can tell if it's going to be a poem or prose by exactly what you're saying. When I have no idea what I'm feeling, I just know that I'm having a feeling, it's a poem, because the poem is the discovery process. And poetry, I think, also is all about nuances, right? It's not about the black and white. And this is something I try to do throughout my poetry. You know, I wouldn't consider this an anti-Trump poem. It's not just a poem of protest. It's a poem that scratches below the surface. Poems, for me, are found in the gray areas.
I couldn't help but contrast this poem with the poem you wrote 4 years ago for Barack Obama's second inauguration. Both begin on a morning of political change. I don't know if you were intentionally referring to the inaugural poem, but there's this line, you know, you've gone up Prospect to see Tom at the bank when you're cashing a check from some grand magazine for a grand poem of yours loaded with some grand words like transcend. Are you, it seems to me you're kind of suggesting you're looking back at what it meant to be an inaugural poet and feeling now perhaps a little helpless?
Yeah, and sort of doubting in some ways what a poem can do, right? And sort of being vulnerable myself as a poet in this poem, thinking about, did all that really matter? And does it all really matter today? And in some ways also thinking about, I don't know, I'm thinking out loud here, but, you know, at some point, words may not be enough. And do I need to do more than just write? I'm not saying not write. I'm saying more in addition to writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I've been feeling lately in the last few decades, you know, that we've been slowly dodging our responsibilities to our democracy. You know, we vote for president once every 4 years, big whoop. More happens in my Bethel town planning meetings that affects my life directly sometimes than a presidential election. We've surrendered a lot of our participation in democracy to parties, as if we can only speak to each other through party lines. And knowing, though, that really it's when people get to know each other and get to speak to each other across the table that's where real democracy happens, right? At the end of the day, things are worked out person to person. There's a saying in Spanish, hablando se entiende todo, which sounds a lot prettier in Spanish, but it's just like talking, we can understand anything.
Mm-hmm. How does your family background inform your thinking about democracy? Because your parents and grandparents came here after the Cuban Revolution, right?
Yes, they came actually almost a full 10 years after the revolution. So I have a lot of stories about that. And like I said, that looking in each other's eyes and that kind of questioning and mistrust reminded me of stories of my parents. Of, you know, there were these neighborhood committees that were sort of in charge of sort of reporting and policing and, you know, just keeping an eye on the village or on the city or in the neighborhood, making sure you're being a good communist, right? And these people are sometimes your own brother or sister, or sometimes a neighbor that you've known for 40 years, or a cousin. I mean, my parents come from a very small sugar mill town. And then suddenly, even in this small little town, there was this divide that nobody sort of talked about. That informed this poem in particular, but more so my poetry in general and my take on politics in general is that I grew up in a very polarized community, right, in Miami. So, you know, in history books in grade school, you read all about how great Kennedy was and all this stuff, and Kennedy, great American hero. And then at home in the community, there's this whole story of the Bay of Pigs, and their perspective of Kennedy was like just terrible, right? Because they felt betrayed by him. And then you'd read things in the textbooks about Fidel Castro's communist Cuba and all the great strides in healthcare and education and all the rest. And then you'd hear my parents' stories about being fired from their jobs and having their bank accounts frozen, having their houses confiscated. So education at the expense of what? And I'm talking about, again, my parents were not one of those millionaire Cubans. They were all working lower middle class, small sugar mill town. So what I learned early on in life is that the truth is usually in the gray.
Well, I was wondering, given everything you got sensitized to growing up with parents and grandparents who had that kind of experience, is there something you learned from them that might help in terms of healing?
Sure. And I think it, in some ways, it comes back to some of what's in this poem, and that at the end of the day, it's about connecting human being to human being, right? With my parents and my Cuban community at large, everybody has a stereotype of the Miami Cuban as this ultra-conservative Republican, you know, doesn't, you know, has nothing to do with Cuba, you know, like blah, 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 you know. And while certainly there is a layer of that, but underneath there's this quiet happening since the 90s. You know, there's a sense that we've not been going to Cuba for 60 years. Like, Cubans have been going to Cuba since like the 90s, like, or even the 80s. I think my very first trip was in 1994. And partly it's because it's the ties of family and friends and that other connection that in some ways bypasses the politics. So my mother, for example, you know, left her 8 brothers and sisters in Cuba, not under such great circumstances. And over time, the bridge that's been built is because, hey, at the end of the day, we're family, right? And at the end of the day, maybe this is another thing to consider, we're Cuban. Whether you're on this side of the 90 miles or on the other side of the 90 miles, we're of one culture. That's a much bigger question for America than it is perhaps for Cuba. But and maybe that's what we need to define, what keep on defining what American means and connect to that instead of
focus on the things that we have in common, that we are together, rather than talk perhaps quite so much about the ways in which we're different.
Exactly. And I mean, the one positive thing, I think, in, at least in my perspective, that's beautiful that's happening is that we are concerned not just about our own interests anymore, but about what are these certain policies or these certain stances and that undefine or redefine or misdefine America. I'm thinking about for the travel ban, for example. Many of those people protesting and whatnot at airports and not, they may not even have even known someone personally that was affected by that ban, but it was saying to the world and to our country, no, that's the wrong story. We need to get this story right. And it's not just because it affects me personally. And that kind of altruism of thinking, and again, that is what a democracy demands from us. And I think that will go away towards defining the undefinable America. Even if the definition of America is that we can't define it, that itself is a definition. And I think that's a valid one, right?
That's great. Richard, thank you so much for talking, and thank you for writing the poem.
My pleasure. It was wonderful.
Richard Blanco was the official poet for Barack Obama's second inauguration. He's written several books of poems and a celebrated memoir called The Prince of Los Cocuyos. The poem he wrote for us is called November Eyes on Main Street, and you can read it on our website at ttbook.org. This concludes our News from Poems series. Shout out and thanks to our partner, the poetry website asphodel.info. And join us again next week. I'm Anne Strainchamp, sits to the best of our knowledge from PRI.
PRI, Public Radio International.